Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Millions of people have turned out on the streets of Iran to protest against the United States and what Iranians call Washington's arrogant policies. Now, this one day before U.S. reimposition of sanctions against Iran, we will bring you more in this report.
It's the National Student Day in Iran, when people march in mass rallies nationwide on the anniversary of U.S. Embassy takeover in 1979 by a group of university students. They believed the embassy had turned into a den of espionage to overthrow the new Islamic Republic. In the capital, Tehran, protesters converged near the former U.S. Embassy building to condemn Washington's never-ending threats and sanctions.
Commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Brigadier General Aziz Jafari, was one of the key speakers of the Sunday rally in Tehran. He had this to say to the U.S. government.
This goes to the U.S. and its strange President Trump. Never threaten Iran. We can still hear your soldiers crying because they were scared to be in Iran's Tabaz. We can still hear the fears and cries of your captured naval forces in the Persian Gulf. You know full well how many of them committed suicide because of the symptoms of PTSD and other mental health problems.
This year's rallies came after the U.S. administration decided to reimpose its unilateral sanctions lifted under the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran. The demonstrators slammed Washington for the move, branding the U.S. government as the nation's number one enemy.
We took part in the rally to give President Trump a slap in the face. The U.S. is our enemy. It cannot force us back to the negotiating table.
The U.S. has been our enemy for 40 years. It is against our revolution because the Islamic Republic helped the resistance front to defeat the U.S.-led warmongers in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. As our leader said, America's power is in decline and the country is much weaker today than it was 40 years ago.
The U.S. has been the enemy of Iranian people for decades. It has now waged an economic and psychological war. The sanctions are aimed at crippling Iran's economy and progress. But we will be victorious because we are on the right side of history.
In a final declaration after the mass rallies, demonstrators once again reaffirmed their allegiance to the Islamic Republic, while condemning Washington for reinstating sanctions. They also expressed solidarity with the long-suffering people of Palestine, Yemen, and Syria. Qaman Odiri, Press TV, Tehran.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program out of Richmond, Frederick Peterson, Senior Congressional Defense Advisor, and out of London, Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and commentator. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Richmond. And Frederick, well, millions of Iranians took to the streets to protest against U.S. policies against their country and others. Do you understand why the Iranian people feel that they must protest against Washington?
I understand that the Iranian people are flowing into the streets, induced to do so, to make a public statement in support of the government and to oppose the policy of the United States announced by Donald Trump to withdraw from, actually to renegotiate the agreement that we had with Iran. It should be noted that the United States does not consider itself an enemy of either Iran or the Iranian people. We consider ourselves to be an admirer of the Iranian culture and a potential partner with Iran in regional and cooperator in a struggle for world peace.
What is all of this then, Frederick? Sorry to interrupt you, but then what does it mean? It doesn't make sense than what you're saying. Sorry to interrupt you. How can you be an admirer of the Iranian people? Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, actually, I believe that it does make sense, and it can make dollars too, both for Iran, the economy of Iran, the world economy, because Iran is a very large holder of oil, It is an exporter of oil in the first magnitude of countries that export oil and rely upon it, but that also makes it a regional competitor both in economy and in that natural resource with others who have similar exports available. There, you cannot just look at one discrete part and have it separate from the other considerations, the political considerations that have caused the difficulties within that region, and the geostrategic considerations that have competition in that region with other major world exporting petroleum countries that are potentially very dangerous, and the agreement, not a treaty, an agreement, the false instrument to have to initiate and to see through an understanding between countries. It should in fact be a treaty. Donald Trump is reaching for a treaty that meets the needs of both sides, the
okay.
legitimate needs.
All right,
of
let me get our other guests in on this conversation. Stay with me, Frederick.
Said
Mohsen, your take. It's I'm trying to figure out exactly where Frederick is going with this, because on the one hand, he started off with the admiration that the United States has for the Iranian people, Iranian culture, and that there is no problem. And that they do not want to punish the Iranian nation. But then at the same time, there was the JCPOA that was intact, that basically Donald Trump and the United States basically reneged on, pulled themselves out of. What does it all mean in your perspective, Said Mohsen?
Well, very simply, let's get one thing straight. The withdrawal of the U.S. from the JCPOA is nothing to do with U.S. interests. It's to do with Israeli interests. The forces which have ordered Donald Trump to withdraw from the JCPOA don't really come from within the American public's point of view. They don't really know what on earth is going on most places in the world, to be honest. But let's come down to who really is calling the shots and who pulls the strings. Benjamin Netanyahu needs the U.S. To have no relations with Iran until Iran bends its knee to Zionist imperialism in that region. The Iranians have made the absolute, you know, if you like, cardinal sin that they've actually called out the Israelis and the Zionists for what they're doing in the Middle East, which is effectively enslaving and using that region for resource rape. They're using that region for their own expansion of an illegal state. And I really do make it very, very clear. I mean, the United States has no interest in following most of the policies it's got going in the Middle East today. He's absolutely right. Mr. Peterson's absolutely right. The U.S. has every interest in working collaboratively with Iran. But the problem is that they're not allowed to, because the forces in the background, whether it's the moneylender structural elite or whether it's the Israelis or all the forces that are manipulating the U.S. Pseudo-democracy, which is actually just a plutocracy. It's the rich boys who are basically calling the shots. And Donald Trump is just another puppet. And that's the problem. The Iranians don't have a puppet regime. They're standing independently with their own policies. The Americans need to smell the coffee and wake up and understand that their nation is being put through trillions and trillions of dollars of expense of warfare in the Middle East, which ultimately doesn't help the ordinary American. It helps those moneylenders and those capitalists who rape those regions for their own greedy purposes.
Well, what about that, Frederick Peterson? It appears, from what our other guest has said and what we are seeing, that the United States and having certain types of relations with Iran would be more beneficial, actually, for Americans themselves. And it does appear, because, of course, we know that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu continually tried to rally everyone against the JCPOA. At the end of the day, is it really the United States that's benefiting from getting out of the JCPOA, or actually is it Tel Aviv?
Well, I think it is the world that is benefiting from a rewriting of that agreement. We're not talking about a scrapping of that agreement. We're talking about a rewriting of that agreement so that its legitimate ends are legitimately pursued effectively and truthfully. That the reason why Donald Trump has withdrawn has not been because the United States is being intimidated by the tiny fly speck of a state of Israel whose very right to exist is denied, its very right to existence and legitimacy is denied by much of that part of the world. And when they act for their own self-defense, for their own protection, their actions in self-defense are called criticism, are criticized.
Okay, Frederick, we're getting on a different subject.
Should not be advancing.
And Frederick, if you want to go there, then we can also talk about the United States and billions of dollars of support for the Tel Aviv regime. But that is not what we're talking about right now. I want to look at, seriously, who is benefiting. You're saying, Frederick, that actually the United States did not basically tear up this agreement. They just want to renegotiate. What gives Washington the right of all of these years, of all of these countries coming together, spending time, actually coming up and agreeing to something that was looked at as an international agreement, and then one man comes and decides, Donald Trump, that no, we don't want to do this, we're going to do it all over again. And if you don't listen to me, we will definitely punish you. What does that mean? It sounds like a mentality of a fascist regime. Said Mohsen, your take.
Well, you see, the thing is, the JCPOA was agreed by the other major nations. Now, none of them have got a problem with the JCPOA agreement, in essence. They all regarded it as a fair and solid agreement, and one which would have worked for everybody. That's what gives the game away, you see, because when the Russians, the Chinese, the British, and the Germans, and all the other players who were involved in negotiating this, and let's face it, over a period of, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, was it? To go that painstakingly in detail, and for the Americans to be in on it all the way along, and then just to unilaterally pull out, tells you that something is quite wrong in this, because they're standing against the rest of the world, and this is not an accident. They've been doing it across other agreements. The Trans-Pacific agreement that they were going for, it has been dumped. Their involvement with the Human Rights International agreements, that's being dumped. Their commitments to sort of many other agreements I could mention, which they're unilaterally pulling out. This is a policy which is being instigated, and the strings are being pulled in the background to basically isolate America from the world. Now, America is not averse to having its economy destroyed. The U.S. Dollar is intrinsically linked to petrol and to oil in the Middle East. The only thing holding that dollar together, ultimately, is Saudi Arabia and the pumping of oil out that they do. So the bottom line is the U.S. economy is already, I don't know how many trillions in debt. The American public is at the grassroots, has huge poverty issues. There are massive problems within this in the country which the Americans should be spending their money on. Their own people. Instead, you've got these warlords, the likes of Bolton and Trump, etc., who've been imposed on the American people through all sorts of nefarious media propaganda techniques, which allow them to sort of come to the fore, and background forces which are doing many things to spiral America ever more towards the right wing. These guys basically are just there to do a hatchet job. They want conflict. They want balkanization of the Middle East. Even Iran, they want Iran to be completely out of the equation, because what does Iran offer? It fundamentally gives hope to the oppressed. The Iranian revolution, the Islamic revolution of Iran, more accurately, gives a moral option, an alternative to neoliberal, plutocratic, kleptocratic pseudo-democracy. And this is what actually the moneylenders and those behind those pseudo-democracies cannot stand. Because at the heart of it, Iran ultimately will have to operate a non-usurious system. They have to opt out of this nonsense of moneylenders and bowing and kowtowing to the central banks and the Rothschilds and whoever else is gaining from the world's kind of majority of resources.
Okay.
And I think I would say, quite frankly, Iran is better off without that that system. Go self-sufficient, create your own economy, and give these guys the sending off that they deserve, and carry on with your path. That's what I would say to the Iranian people.
Well, Frederick, does Washington actually want conflict with Iran or in general just in this region? Because it seems that we see policy after policy, decision after decision that's made dealing with Iran or dealing with the region that just causes so much chaos or uncertainty. What's the ultimate goal when you look at Washington and the decisions that it makes? Let's talk about Iran first.
I truly believe from my heart, from my head, and from my pocketbook, and from the interests of the United States and Iran, that the United States, under the leadership of the current administration, is seeking peace and collaboration, cooperation, and friendship with the people of Iran who are reaching for collaboration, cooperation, and friendship as well. Now, that does not include all the people within the United States, admittedly. It certainly does not include all of the people within Iran, admittedly. But the majority, I firmly believe, in both, the clear majority in both countries, are seeking this. The administration is seeking it. There was a very scathing critique made of the JCPOA, that it was the wrong vehicle, that it was run in the wrong direction. It was passed and approved not as a treaty, which in itself is a fatal flaw, and it did not accomplish the ends which it sought to accomplish.
So then would you say that it is indicative,
then
Frederick, would you say that it is indicative that basically countries dealing with the United States really don't know what to expect? They don't know that when they make a deal under a certain president, if it's going to be intact later on, if the Congress is going to change its mind. I mean, it just seems that it's a player that no one really would want to sit down and try to make a deal with. Don't you think that the United States is losing its legitimacy and credibility?
A deal is not a treaty. The Obama administration, in their waning
That's not what I asked you, sir. I asked you about credibility. I asked you about giving your word from one administration to the other, being able to keep it and losing or gaining credibility. Is the United States losing credibility or not, in your perspective?
Short answer, no.
Okay.
Because a treaty is giving your word.
Well, we have seen treaties. We have also seen treaties that the United States has come out of with Donald Trump. So we have seen treaties also, Frederick Peterson. We're not just talking about JCPOA. We have so many examples right now in dealing with the Trump presidency. But Sid Mohsen, in your perspective, why does the United States behave? It almost appears like a rogue regime. We see time and time again dealing with country after country. It's either you do what we say to do or we will punish you. And we've just seen the sanction regime used time and time again. And now we have the newer sanctions, not only against Iran, but the so-called now troika of tyranny, that they always give these key little cliche phrases as if it's a movie. How do you see it, Sid Mohsen?
Well, one statistic should open our eyes up. In 2000, there were eight nations that weren't linked to the central bank of and the U.S. Directly in that sense, and they were included Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya. Funny enough, four or five of those nations have been toppled. They've been toppled by involvement of the U.S. and the imperial Western Axis. for that very reason. Because basically, unless you're willing to kowtow to the world hegemonic economists, you will be terrorized by them. Iran has been terrorized by this economic method of terrorism by the US and its partners ever since 1979. We're celebrating almost the independence of Iran, if you like, with the embassy, occasion of the embassy, the US embassy hostage, if you like, crisis beginning. But you see, at that stage, from that point onwards, military sanctions were imposed. I remember British chieftain tanks were due to go out to Iran, and the Shah of Iran fell, and the British government pulled away its chieftain tanks at that time in 1979. And we're now in 2018. So what's changed? Iran has been in this situation of economic terrorism for as long as it's been the Islamic Republic. Now, the Americans coming back and threatening more economic sanctions. Look, the Iranian establishment will find solutions. And the more the US and the moneylenders push Iran, the easier it is for Iran to actually go even more towards what I would describe as ethical, moral, Islamic, economic systems.
Okay, stay with me. I just want to get Frederick in. Let me just get Frederick in 30 seconds. Frederick, your take. What does it take, actually, to ease this animosity? Is it possible with the way that we have seen events take place almost now for 40 years?
I believe, and I remember, we each remember those events very clearly. There has never been an animosity toward the Iranian people on the part of the United States in the worst days of crisis. It's a question of leadership. It's a question in the United States of leadership as well as it is there. The Trump administration is attempting to correct gross mistakes of bad leadership on our side. The Iranian people will correct gross mistakes of bad leadership there.
Okay.
The United States is in a virtually unprecedented period of wealth, growth, and prosperity.
All right, let me get
Iran
30 seconds, Said Mohsen.
That.
So sorry, Frederick, because we're out of time. 30 seconds, Said Mohsen. How do you see this result? Do you think that the Iranian people will actually do well or will be able to survive these latest sanctions? How do you see it?
It'll be tough, without doubt. But look, during the economic sanctions that have gone before, 70% of women have become educated to a high level. The Islamic Republic has become the fastest growing scientific nation during that time, i.e. its own knowledge industry has expanded. So they're not relying just on resource mining within Iran. They have a knowledge economy, but they must expand that. They must expand greater self-reliance in terms of agriculture. They must build more infrastructures, not to have to rely on this corrupt system that the world is being strangled by, which is linked to the moneylenders. And I think Iran is more than capable of surviving these economic sanctions, and it will survive them.
And
it will
go
on from strength to strength.
Both of you for being with us. So sorry, we're out of time. Frederick Peterson out of Richmond, Senior Congressional Defense Advisor. Said Mohsen Abbas out of London, journalist and commentator. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.